Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, January 6, 2023. Six journalists working for the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation have been detained by the country's national security.
And we've gathered some information so far. We've visited some offices of the security, and we found out that one of the reasons is actually connected to the video that was leaked.
And civil society groups in Sudan say they are ready to move the country forward. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The president of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan says six journalists working for the national broadcaster, SSBC, have been detained by the National Security Service in Juba. It appears, he says, the arrests are related to a leaked video of the country's president. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Patrick Oyet, who heads the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, says five journalists were arrested on Tuesday, while the sixth one was arrested Wednesday. They all work for the government-owned South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation. Oyet says the reason for the arrests are unclear, but it appears to be related to a leaked video of President Salva Kiir.
One thing that we're already doing is to find out exactly why they were arrested. And we've gathered some information so far. We've visited some offices of the security, and we found out that one of the reasons is actually connected to the video that was leaked, the video of the president that was leaked. So they are basically suspects, and they are being investigated, and of which we were told if they are found to not have been the people who send the video out, then they would be set free.
In December, a video was leaked and circulated on social media showing President Salva Kiir in an embarrassing situation. Michael McQuay, South Sudan Information Minister, was reluctant to confirm whether the journalists were arrested, but says people should wait to hear the reason why they were detained.
Why were they arrested? Okay, then you wait up to the time you will know. I said until you know why.
Several calls to Elijah Alier, Managing Director for South Sudan Media Authority, which regulates the work of journalists, were unsuccessful as Alier's phone number was unreachable. According to the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, the six journalists arrested are the editor of the control room, Joval Tombe, technician and cameraman Mustafa Osman, cameraman Jacob Benjamin, and Oliver Wani, technician and cameraman Jerbeg Ruben, and editor Victor Lado. Oyet calls for a speedy investigation.
What we're only asking is that if at all the investigation is ongoing, as we are assured, then let it be speedy. Let it move quickly. And then the law is for all of us. We cannot refuse to be under the law. And whichever law is there, let us follow it. Let us move the process quickly.
Oyet reiterates his call for journalists to be professional and do no harm to their sources whenever they carry out their work.
Before you send any material out, not only video, whether text or audio, the first thing you ask yourself as a journalist is what I'm going to send out good for public consumption? Is it in the public interest? This is the first question. Number two, there's another principle which says, do no harm. As a journalist, the work that I am doing should not cause somebody harm.
Many people in South Sudan have condemned the release of the video and have said those who leaked acted irresponsibly. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
The Sudanese civil society groups that signed the framework agreement with the military government say they will begin the second phase of the political process scheduled to kick off next week. The signatories are expected to set up workshops and meetings on key issues before signing a final agreement with the military. Michael Attit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Khaled Omar Youssef is a prominent member of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition. He says at the meeting Thursday, the groups that signed the framework agreement with the government resolved to immediately begin discussions aimed at reaching a final political agreement with the military.
The meeting resolved to launch the final political process on January 8, which will begin with a roadmap conference to renew the process of dismantling al-Bashir's elements. The conference will then follow by discussions on the remaining four issues in accordance with the framework agreement among the signatories and the trilateral mechanism.
On December 5th, several Sudanese political forces and the military agreed on a framework to pave a way for formation of a civilian-led transition government. Some of the civilian groups that signed the framework agreement met Thursday to begin discussing ways to address key issues in the agreement. The issues include the Juba Peace Agreement, security reforms, Eastern Sudan's plight, and transitional justice. After Thursday's meeting, Youssef told journalists the gathering renewed the commitment of all signatories to fully implement the agreement. He called on the non-signatory forces to join the process of resolving the political deadlock in the country and restoring the democratic transition in Sudan.
The final phase of the political process shall witness a recommitment from all the signatories and will ensure an exclusive process from all the stakeholders. It shall initiate a comprehensive action towards issues that secure a path of sustainable democratic transformation in Sudan.
Ali Askori is the chairman of the Democratic Alliance for Social Justice, one of the groups that rejected the framework agreement. Speaking Thursday night on Al Hadas TV channel, he was skeptical about the seriousness of the signatories to the agreement. He accuses some foreign forces of imposing the agreement, which he says interferes with the Sudan's sovereignty. Askori did not name any specific foreign nations or organizations in his comment. The agreement was reached after mediation efforts by the United Nations, the African Union, and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. He says Sudanese problems should be resolved only by Sudanese themselves.
The framework agreement has a clear interference with the judiciary, Sudan armed forces, intelligence and the police, among others. These institutions form the basic elements of any state. And as the Sudanese people, we reject any interference of any outsider into our sovereign institutions.
The framework signatories stress the importance of international and regional support for the political process and call to activate coordination mechanisms with the international community in the next stage to achieve the final political agreement. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
Still on civil society issues, the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance is calling on the government to improve the welfare of security sector personnel as one way of addressing the wave of recurring violence across parts of the country. The chairperson of the alliance says the security sector is weak and not able to meet expectations because of a lack of support for personnel. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu filed this story from the capital, Juba.
Akoch Ajang says the government is not adequately supporting their security forces. They are being paid low salaries that do not compensate for rising prices across the country, and they are not being motivated.
The salaries that they receive, they cannot bring even a meal or a food for one day for their families. So a soldier will not sacrifice his life or will not go and fulfill the duty when they are not receiving enough salaries. In fact, they are busy to feed their families by all means. So that's why they are not doing proper job on the ground.
Ajang spoke during a news conference at the office of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance today. He says while a lawmaker is paid around $2,000 per month, the salary of a general at the Army headquarters, Belfast Military Base, is around $20 only per month.
Unless the government provide reasonable salaries to these organized forces, to the civil servant, there will be no stability in the country. Simply, there's no hope. And people are struggling either to loot money, loot cattle, fire another person,
for economic reasons it is happening. Youth, on the other hand, are not employed in the country. They are vulnerable. So they work hard to take whatever is available in front of them.
Ajang also blames insecurity on empty cattle herders in parts of the Equatorial region, saying they partly exacerbate the violence. He says another issue is the ineffective implementation of the security arrangements in the revitalized peace agreement. He says despite the fact that most of the unified forces have graduated, they have not been deployed, allocated their ranks, and are not even receiving salaries yet.
It was a hope to each citizen in this country that the organized forces, the police, the security, and the army were going to provide protection, protect life and properties in the country. And that's the sole responsibility of the government of the day, of course. People form government to protect their life and their properties. Unfortunately, that unified forces never exist. They are in papers.
Ajang calls on the government to urgently intervene and address the issue of empty cattle herders in parts of Equatorial region. The South Sudan Army spokesperson, Major General Lulroy Kwon, confirms that the unified forces have not yet been deployed as government is working on a plan.
It will be rolled out as soon as the last batch is graduated on the 13th of this month, the last batch at Kaljak. In regards to the rounds, His Excellency the President requested his counterparts to submit the list of officers for confirmation and commissioning. The delay is not on our side. In the same regard, once the lists have been submitted and confirmed through a Republican order, the names will be submitted so that a supplementary budget is made in regards to their salaries.
Violence has reached across parts of the country over the last 4 months, and in particular the Upper Nile and Equatorial regions, involving empty cattle herders. Observers say that empty pastoralists across the country are increasing and are undermining the constitutional responsibility of the government to protect civilians and guarantee the rule of law. Activist Eddie Moniakani says President Salva Kiir should take responsibility and work to achieve his constitutional obligation for holding accountable individuals or groups that undermine the constitutional order. Yakani says civilians across the country are suffering from the actions of the empty herders. Yakani says undisciplined politicians, military leaders, and traditional leaders are increasing, undermining the government's ability to protect communities. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Ethiopian refugees living in Sudan say they want to go home. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. He was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Some of the more than 70,000 Ethiopians who fled to Sudan during the two-year war in the Tigray region are hoping to soon go home. This is a November peace deal between the Ethiopian Federal Forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front appears to be holding. But some Tigrayan refugees are skeptical the peace deal will last, as Michael Atit reports from Umrakuba refugee camp in Sudan.
61-year-old Tigrayan Tesfai Gabriel Mariam fled Ethiopia's civil war to Sudan's Umrakuba refugee camp 2 years ago after his wife was killed in the fighting. He has since lived with his two grandchildren in a makeshift shelter. But the November peace deal between Ethiopia's federal government and Tigrayan authorities has raised hopes they may be able to soon return home. Tesfai says if peace is implemented and there is a stability in Ethiopia, they will go back. But he says he understands people are still being targeted. If there is a total peace, says Tesfai, they are ready to go home. But they say peace has come, he says, and then they come and kill our people again. Tesfai says that is why we can't believe them. Rights group says hundreds of thousands of Tigrayans were pushed out of their homes in what amounts to ethnic cleansing, a notion that Ethiopian authorities reject. Even if their safety was guaranteed, it is not clear what Tigrayan refugees like Tesfai would have left if they returned home. Tesfai worked as a grocer in Tigray's capital, Mekele, but says his shop was looted during the war. His story and fears are echoed by other Tigrayans living in Umrakuba. Mulugar Sihar, a 58-year-old mother of four, also arrived at the camp 2 years ago. She says life here has been difficult and they are ready to go home to Tigray if there is peace. She says peace is good, but we are not sure if the agreement is going to be implemented. Muluk says they are happy that they have agreed to stop fighting and accept to work for peace. She says we want to live with our children in our homeland. The peace deal stated that foreign forces would withdraw from Ethiopia, the TPLF would disarm, and key services would be restored to Tigray. In December, Ethiopia restored some telecommunications power and flights to Tigray and allow more humanitarian aid to enter the region. Witnesses in the Tigray region towns of Exum and Shire last week said Eritrean forces that fighting on the side of Ethiopia's federal forces withdrew, though it was not clear if Eritrean troops had left Tigray completely. But 61-year-old Tigrayan refugee Birhan Hero still fears the peace deal will not hold. She says services in Umrakuba camp have worsened in recent months, but she still prefers staying in Sudan rather than going home and risk being killed. Birhan says, we will only go back home when Ethiopia has a new prime minister. For now, she says, I prefer staying here in the camp. We lost many of our relatives during this war, says Birhan, and that is why I'm not going back. The United Nations in October estimated 500,000 Ethiopians have died from conflict, hunger, disease, and lack of medical care during the war. The UN's refugee agency in Sudan was not immediately available for comment on when it would be safe for Tigrayans to return to Ethiopia. The Sudanese Humanitarian Commission, which is responsible for the country's refugee issues, did not respond to requests for comment. Michael Atid for VOA News, Umrakuba Refugee Camp, Sudan.
Kenyan author Ngugi Wa Thiong'o is known as one of the Africa's most important contemporary writers and intellectuals who has made significant contribution to the fields of literature, theater, and cultural studies. Most of his books, including Weep Not Child, The River Between, and The Petals of Blood, are considered as African classic literature. Ngugi, who turned 85, often addresses themes of colonialism, independence, cultural identity, and he is known for his commitment to using literature as a tool for social change.
What I'm trying to say is that this negative attitude towards ourselves become normalized, and they may translate into, oh, We have nothing. We have no originality. So even when an educated African person may have a PhD, he may still not have the confidence that arises from knowing that that PhD is somehow also arises from his entire relation to his own culture and languages and so on. In other words, he sees that PhD, that achievement, as a tribute to his connection with European languages and cultures and so on. Of course, I want to add very, very emphatically that there's nothing wrong in any person knowing as many languages as possible. And it's very important for people to be very effective in whatever language is the language of power. What is basically wrong in terms of policies and personal practices is to assume that one's own language and cultures have nothing to give.
Now, in this book, you say that the African Renaissance began at the historical moment, which was a catalyst to resistance movements across the continent, movements like the Mau Mau in Kenya, the ANC in South Africa, and many others around the continent. And you talk about the turning point of Afro-modernity being the 1945 Manchester Congress, which you say provided a momentum to the 50s and the 60s liberation movements. What would you say happened to those movements in the subsequent years, the 80s and the 90s?
The idea of Africa, when Europeans first came, or colonizers came to our own countries, we fought against them as individual communities. So if it's a Yoruba, they fought against the colonial invasions as Yorubas and so on. But once we were occupied, there came a moment when we were no longer struggling against the colonial presence as individual linguistic communities, but rather as all the communities in a given territory.
Mm-hmm.
Not even that, we began to think ourselves in terms of a continent of African peoples. So whether we're in Kenya or South Africa or West Africa, we talked about Africa, okay? So that's what I mean when the idea of Africa begins to be the organizing principle.
It becomes a collective, right?
Yeah, because collective. We are now where we moved higher level. And not only that, it's very interesting that that idea of Africa, as I tried to explain in the book, in a way it was born abroad by those Africans who were already detached from the continent through enslavement, because they could think of Africa as a whole. So Marcus Garvey could talk about Africa for Africans at home and abroad, for instance. Mm. Du Bois and others could also talk about Africa as a whole. And that idea of Africa then also becomes an organizing force in nationalist anti-colonialist struggles.
That's Kenyan author Ngugi Wa Thiong'o speaking to my colleague Jackson Vunganyi. We'd love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. As usual, many of you wrote to us about issues we cover in this broadcast. But first, we start with these recorded messages.
Hello, the boys of America. This is Mabora Lanrengu in Yoruba, Lagos State. Happy New Year 2023. The ongoing violence in the country, in some places in South Sudan, does not need the fear from our government. Therefore, I'm appealing to our government to dispatch some remaining forces to such places so that these places have to be in peace like the other places. Such places include Greater Toy, Greater Pibor Demonstrative Area, and Greater Abiy, so that the violence going in such places have to be quelled down by these remaining forces. Thank you so much.
Hello, Nabil and John Tanza. I'm James Roy Majong from Bentiu Town, South Sudan. I want to make an appeal to Twitch community and Ngo community. This is something beyond control. And I see our government doesn't intervene in a way we can solve the conflict that staged it for almost like 7 men seen fighting broke in a net whereby these two communities, they are killing themselves, and there is no any intervention from South Sudan government. I want to tell more community and big community elders and stakeholders and politicians to have to sit and solve their own affairs amicably instead of killing each other. This is something useless. We are South Sudanese. We want to unite ourselves and we want to develop our countries. Thanks.
Somewhere remote in here writes, Hi John Tanzan and Nabil Biagio. The climate change, Russian-Ukraine invasion, instability and unnecessary taxes imposed on traders' goods have made the cost of living higher than a local person's income. This has made a lot of quarrels in the households by few individual women who thought it was done intentional and may result in breaking up families. This listener says, Hello VOA, call me James from Bor. I am looking forward to the government of South Sudan to find a lasting solution to the communal violence between Greater Bibor Administrative Area and Jungula State, which always repeats itself every year. Thank you. This fan says, Hello VOA. I am Obaloker Moses from Palabek Refugee Camp in northern Uganda. I am happy to hear about my country on your daily news. I am requesting the management to also include sports in your program. Thank you. Lual Tonaganj from Kwat Payam in Jungle State says, Hello VOA. Happy New Year to you and all your listeners around the globe. May this year be a year of peace and development in South Sudan, where there will be no more road ambushes, unknown gunmen will be known, and peaceful coexistence among the citizens of South Sudan. Peter Goyanyang Majungdul in Block 3 of Bor Town says, As we reach the first week of the new year, I appreciate the good work done by the VOA team headed by John Tanza, Nabil Biagio, Michael Atit, Waki Simon Wudu, Manyang David Mayar, Moki Edwin Kinzaka of Cameroon, Dengai Deng, listeners like Roy Majok, Mading Malwal Alwong, Dior Machweng, Mabor Alat, Mal Adao Mal, and lastly to journalist Igwe Martin Manuel Ugol. May God fill 2023 with peace and prosperity. This listener says, Hello, John Tanza. It is me, Kennedy Asu, from the Bidibidi refugee camp in Uganda. We're happy for the coming of Pope Francis to Juba, South Sudan, the first week of February. Good news for all South Sudanese in Uganda and Kenya. And finally, this listener says, Hello, Nabil. This is Kevin Amazon in Juba. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you all. Keep on the good work you are doing for us in South Sudan. The only thing I want to say is SPLM is a confused party. It has lost all its core values. People of South Sudan will continue to suffer until God's intervention. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from so many of you. Keep those comments coming.
Send us your comments and brief voice messages and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +202-630-8011. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday. Don't forget to check out VOA Africa for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. When I leave you with Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan.
Salam, salam.
Salam, 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 ya Rais.
We've been listening to Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us.